things are getting jazzy here, but we have to pull down the volume on the Big Band Broadway and More show. Thanks to Joe for another great 3 hours, and Pal Joey there. I didn't realize how many great tunes, like My Funny Valentine, was in Pal Joey. Was that the, obviously Frank Sinatra wasn't in the Broadway, that's the soundtrack?
Yeah.
The soundtrack, movie soundtrack, but another great... Big Band Broadway and More from Joe. Thanks very much. It's WHFR Dearborn. Yes, it is. The station making waves from Henry Ford Community College. It's now time for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. We're not the same as last week. No, it's news and information about, and editorial opinions, about Dearborn and the surrounding area. Hi, my name is Jay Kornick. I'm one of the hosts of the show today, along with Dennis, our news director. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Just great. And here we are. It is February the 11th. Mm-hmm. So this must be our Valentine's show, because Valentine's Day is coming up Monday.
Like we need a theme, right?
Well, I don't know. Maybe we do. Sometimes it's helpful. I have a Valentine story here connecting it. I went, and it was a tragedy, actually, for me, a personal tragedy. I'm a mall walker, as you know. I try to get about 30 minutes of brisk walking in every day, just right, for the good of my own conscience. No, the good of my health. And when it's bitter cold, like it has been the last couple of days, I'm at Fairlane Town Center.
Perfect.
Unlike other town centers. Now, I used to hate Fairlane Town Center when it opened back in the, was it the 70s?
75, 74.
Yeah. Because it was hard to shop there, because everything squirrels around, different levels and twist and turn. And so it wasn't easy to get there and find and get immediately or as quickly as possible to the store you wanted. You had to go up to the left, over to the right, down the stairs, and then you get to that store. But I found out that for mall walking, it's actually a sort of a varied path.
Absolutely. It's almost hiking.
You know, yeah. And you've got stairs, and you've got inclines if you take the wheelchair ramps and so on. And you don't get tired of it. I always hated it in high school, and I was out for track in high school, never won a race, of course, but nonetheless, it was good exercise, and I was so bored going around that oval.
It's a monotonous thing. Yeah.
And in fact, in one school, I think it was Southgate High School, where we ran track one time, I went to Flat Rock High School, where we had a full-size quarter-mile track. They had an eighth of a mile track.
Oh, wow.
So it felt like, for the mile rate, you're going around in circles.
Yeah,
I mean, you're constantly turning left. You mm-hmm. know, it was
well,
boring.
Well, I mean, you could trick them, I guess.
And my point is that on February the 2nd, just scoping it out, as I always do, for Valentine candy purchases,
sure,
the Godiva store was there.
Oh, good.
And February 4th, I went back, and it was closed.
Wow.
Closed forever. And so just for those people out there that really like that kind of candy, and this is not an ad for Godiva necessarily, but it was has been my choice for years, and I sort of was known for it among my circle of friends. If you're desperate for Godiva, Macy's does have boxed Godiva. You don't have a selection, but they have boxed Godiva. I do recommend the ones with the ribbons on them for sale, because those, according to the salesman, are fresher.
Okay.
All the other boxes are stale. I mean, they're not necessarily,
not
but
as
they're
fresh.
Older.
Yeah.
It's interesting because so the ones that the shipment they got in that's on sale have the red ribbons and roses on them for the Valentine. But that's actually the fresher one. So
interesting.
That's fine. And the Hallmark store has their own candy, the Hallmark card mm-hmm. store, but they also have the little boxes of Godiva little treats, ones or another. So little teeny ones for two, three bucks
a box.
The
sampler ones, sure.
So almost like a sampler boxes. So if you're desperate for Godiva, good luck, folks. But I have to wax tragic here because I think the loss of the Godiva store is the end of Fairlane Town Center as we knew it. from the 1975. It was the last really classy store, and my all due respect to other stores over there now, who some of whom have, like even the big stores, Macy's, Sears, and JCPenney,
sure.
They have some lines of products that are expensive and quality stuff. I'm not running that down necessarily, but of the stores that had a quality name, like the ones that everybody shops at 12 Oaks and Somerset these days,
right.
They're not at Fairlane anymore.
No.
I mean, I was always telling people said, oh, Fairlane is dying, and nothing I want there. Depends what you're looking for. There are stores that are mainly hitting lower and middle income people now.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, 12 Oaks does not have a phone store.
Really?
With all the stores they have, there's no cell phone stores anymore.
They have the kiosks, though, right?
Well, there was, last time I was there, an AT&T kiosk, and they said they were leaving.
Really?
Soon.
Huh.
But we've got four stores and three or four kiosks.
Right.
So what is there about the clientele? I mean, people out there in whatever that is.
12 Oaks is Novi.
Novi, they don't need cell phones, I guess. Good for them, I guess. Save
I
a lot
know.
Of money. I have a cell phone story here, too, that we might do later about how you can make cell phone calls for free.
You also, you showed me an interesting statistic here, speaking of Valentine's Day and the Associated Romance. There's a city on there that we're familiar with, right?
Yeah, it's worth mentioning, and we can dispute the criteria.
Yeah.
But Ann Arbor, Michigan,
right.
Okay, is number 5 in the top 20 of the most romantic cities in America.
And I'm going to wager that Briarwood Mall, which is in Ann Arbor, probably has a cell phone store, but go ahead.
Well, maybe. And they've got a few candy stores.
Yes,
in Ann Arbor,
they
do. But here's the criteria. This is one of these typical, because I get a lot of press releases. My name is out there for being the host of the journal, and I think one or two other people know about it. But in this case, this is from E-Trade Business Wire. Business Wire, anyways, via E-Trade. But Amazon.com did the tallying here, and they're the ones that announced this list of the top 20 most romantic cities in America. And the data comes, though, from not asking people if they love each other.
Of course not. But that has nothing to do with romance.
It's Amazon.com. They're compiling sales data
right.
at their website, of
sure,
course,
sure.
of romance novels and relationship books. Now, you can certainly criticize that, because people that need romance novels and relationship books, maybe their own romance is not going so well.
Maybe they got that from Match.com.
That's all fantasy and troubled romances,
right.
I think, in those two categories. And that includes, by the way, Kindle books, which is what Amazon
E-books.
Supports,
oh,
and
yeah.
also print books.
Right.
But also the number of romantic comedy movies that are sold, that is digital movies and DVDs, so downloads and DVDs, plus Barry White albums, CDs, and MP3s, because that's an indicator of how romantic you are, right?
Sure?
I don't have one, so I guess I'm in trouble.
I guess we're not romantic.
Along with, and they not specifying it here, sexual wellness products.
Well, that's specific
enough,
if you
ask me. I'd love
to
see a list about that on Amazon.
Yeah.
I didn't think they carried such things. But
unfortunately, we probably couldn't read it.
Maybe it's some kinds of vitamins products that
there
they sell or something. Anyway, over the last year, and this is on a per capita basis, so it's not just per 100,000 residents.
Right.
And certainly Ann Arbor has 100,000 plus.
Right.
And so here's a list, though, if you want to go visit a romantic city over the weekend.
Okay.
Number 1 is Alexandria, Virginia.
Without a doubt.
Now, I think that's the nearest big city to Washington, D.C.
It is.
That's where all our politicians have their liaisons, I believe.
Sure, there's parts
of
Maryland.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't.
Oh.
No, but it is a very big city, and it's closest to Washington, D.C., and if anybody needs a little romance, I think Washington, D.C. does. Our politicians are far too grim most of the time.
I agree.
And here comes my editorial opinion, and we're going to have many this hour, of course, that are not necessarily the opinions of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, students, or administrators. But, we got two major wars going on, and we've got a story that we could cover later about budget cuts at the national level. Let's not forget that we would save $1 trillion a year, not $100 billion like the Republic. Oh, we'll find $100 billion in cuts if we weren't at war in Iraq. Yeah, we're still in war there. We're still fighting. We still have a lot of troops. We got a lot of money. And, of course, Afghanistan, Pakistan now, too.
Mm-hmm.
$1 trillion a year we could save right there.
How many lives, too, right?
Well, yeah, I hate to be blunt here, but from what I've read, 10 to 1 innocent to supposed guilty people in those countries are being killed by us.
Right.
We're killing 9 innocent people, clearly innocent. You know, what do they call that?
Collateral.
Collateral damage. Thank you. Yeah. So here's the list. Alexandria, Virginia is number 1. 2, Knoxville, Tennessee. And I don't know anything about Knoxville.
There was a World's Fair there. I know that.
Well, number 3, Orlando, Florida.
Of course, Disney World.
And right. And 4, Miami.
South Beach.
Yeah, I guess.
Less romance.
After Ann Arbor, which is number 5, as we said, Michigan. Columbia, South Carolina. Very interesting. That's where the BMW plant is, I think. Anyway.
the correlation there somewhere.
Sure. Number 7, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Beautiful city right on the river.
Okay. And then 8 is Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
What is it with the South? Romance
Murfreesboro. Well, if you want to look at the data, it's interesting because Alexandria, Virginia came up 2nd year in a row at the top.
Wow.
So they keep buying those romance novels there.
Right, right.
And
Hugh Grant movies.
And the...
I want to point out one city on there. I think
just want to say Florida has 4 cities in the top 20.
Well, okay. To my knowledge, Missouri has 1. And it's St. Louis, which is also the number 1 city for crime. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about a correlation there.
St. Louis is their number 18.
Isn't that interesting?
Right. And Las Vegas is 16.
So after we commit crime, we just love each other.
Go to read the romance novel. But in the sexual wellness category, they've broken it down here.
Oh, wow.
You can only guess sexual wellness products on Amazon.
Okay.
Miami.
Really?
They need more sexual wellness, bro. They're not so well. They love sex, I guess, or romance, but right. They need those products to keep going.
So you do. You wonder if it's an indicator of the...
They don't sell Viagra on Amazon, do they?
No. Okay. That's a prescription.
Wow. Why let that get in the way?
Right.
So that's very interesting and probably means absolutely nothing if you look at it. It's just purchasing. You know, I would like to believe, final comment on this topic, that St. Valentine's Day, letting people who we love, especially love, maybe romantic love in particular, on Valentine's Day, we wouldn't wait once a year to tell them that and to do loving things. I hope that could be every day, like Christmas.
Well,
wouldn't that be great?
There's also the Sweetest Day, but, so don't forget that.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying these are holidays that get our attention, right. And we buy a bunch of stuff. It shouldn't require the buying, number 1,
right.
Opinion of mine. And number 2, it should be year-round. If you really love someone, every day is the day for this kind of celebration. And it doesn't, the money thing doesn't necessarily have to be tied together with that, although Amazon would like you to believe that. All right.
They want to know I show the love for my wife by reading romance novels.
Okay.
I don't. Okay.
So Dennis knows what topics I have. What would you like to do next?
I like what we were talking about in regard to the upcoming sustainability.
Yeah. Okay.
We've talked about it at length.
Well, we're reminding people that certainly it's free to attend the roundtable for sustainability number 4. Mm-hmm. Sponsored by the Sierra Club Cool Cities Project, and actually it has been co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights for the last couple of times, too. They have a chairperson supporting that, and so on. It's going to be next Tuesday, February 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. here on the Henry Ford Community College campus, but it's on the North Campus.
SME?
Yes, it's just the north side of our main campus on 5101. Some people think that the Dearborn Heights Center of HFCC is north. It's really northwest, isn't it?
Right.
But anyway, no, we just meet at the north part, closer to Ford Road than the main campus. It's a separate little driveway to get into the SMEs, formerly the Society of Manufacturing Engineers building that we now own, and we're leasing out a couple rooms to the SME.
Right.
But the community center conference room in that building is where it's going to happen from 6 to 8. And the topic is going to be?
Chemical contaminants in our food and water.
Lourdes
Lohr, who teaches nutrition classes at HFCC, and this is actually part 2 of her presentation. She had the first one about a month ago, and then she will come up and finish it. And also one of the speakers will be, her name is Lina Kochek. She's from the Food and Water Watch and also the Ferndale Environmental Commission. We talk about, you have talked about the sustainability things. We actually had Mr. Norwood, this sustainability coordinator for the city of Dearborn. And so this is nothing new to listeners. But going to these things, you take away so much knowledge. Now, I know at the last one, Jay, that was the first one you had the opportunity to attend. Mm-hmm. And I felt like a lot of the information may have been redundant for you because you do follow this so closely. But this is open to everyone. Everyone in the any resident, anybody, even from other communities. So the fact is that when these things are on, they're the opposite of a waste of time. I mean, I go in there and I take so much from it, and I know it reinforces it with you. You know,
yeah, no, it's very good. It's also sometimes good to network to see other people from the city and elsewhere that are doing things. They don't necessarily get a lot of publicity. I think they should get the most publicity. Anything that's directly affecting our everyday health. And energy efficiency affects our everyday bank pocketbook, you know, our bankroll dwindling quickly. And of course, some people don't believe in climate change when it's so cold outside. That's just not the case. I even was looking at the Weather Channel 2 days ago. 90% of all the scientists that were surveyed by them, and it was 3,125 climate scientists, environmental scientists, right. People that know, and they didn't explain how these people should be trusted. These are the people that have studied, have doctorate degrees. They've done the research, folks, okay? They actually did the research themselves. They're the ones looking at the thermometers and comparing the data on computers and publishing the papers. These are the people that are intensely involved. 3,125 of them worldwide, the best in the field. And, of course, the Republicans don't trust them. You know, right. They're all wrong. You know, Glenn Beck, they're all wrong. No, they're lie. Right. What? How can they lie? They're doing the research. I'm sorry, Republicans, you collectively, and certain Democrats, was it blue state Democrats? Well, anyway, red state Democrat. Well, we're red state Democrat. Most of us have not done this research. We really can't criticize. Anyway, 90% of them say, yes, there's climate change. And the extreme weather that we're getting in certain places, like all the snowstorms, most of which missed Michigan but have hit the East Coast this year, that's because of the climate actually getting hotter. And 2010 was the hottest year on record, equaling three others in the last 10 years, on record, since they've been tracking, right, you know, temperature for 100, 200 years. And so worldwide, there's no doubt that we have climate change going on, and more extreme weather is happening, and that keeps the ratings up for the Weather Channel, certainly.
It really does. But, you know, I just want to say one thing.
But we have, so food and climate change, it's related together in an interesting way. You have to hear the argument, but especially the topic coming up, which is about contaminants in our food and water. Obviously, we should avoid food and water if they're going to hurt it.
Certain ones,
hurt
for
it.
Sure.
Certain ones, yeah.
You know, and
oh, yeah, avoid them totally.
Well, the quote in the article by the Press and Guide, and congratulations to the Press and Guide for covering this, because they have consistently now. Thank you, Katie Hetrick. But Laura said that she would talk about, quote, stuff you probably don't want to hear or don't want to know, end quote. The reality is that some of the things she's told us in the first part of this presentation, they were eye-opening, these aren't scare tags. This is reality. These are things that are actually in our food.
Yeah, it's stuff that really should be taught specifically. I'm getting a book, and it's he's one of the well-known writers. His name is Michael Pollan, and I'll show it to you. He's written several books on food and what food to eat, and I won't go into those very well-read, very well-written, and very popular books among those people who want to do it. His groundbreaking slogan is mentioned in this article, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Mm-hmm. And he's got a really short little guidebook, and I'm getting a copy from Amazon. By the way, if you have to buy from Amazon, romance or books, go to whfr.fm first. There's a little link we have there. And if you're already going to shop there, which means I'm not doing a commercial, but if you're already going to shop at Amazon, if you just go to that link first, as soon as you click on it, you'll be at Amazon. I mean, you got to click or a couple times to get to the Amazon website anyway on an internet browser. So in this case, all you got to do is go to whfr.fm, scroll down, I think it's on the left, click on the Amazon link, and then WHFR, your favorite radio station, local radio station, will get 3 to 5% of the profit, or 3 to 5% of the sale. depending on the product, directly. They send us checks every month. So that's cool, and that's only if you're already going to shop at Amazon.com, and so we're not recommending that, but I'm just saying is that I'm getting that book today, and I'll bring it with me on Tuesday. It's Poland? Michael Pollan. Yeah,
okay.
P-O-L-L-A-N.
Okay,
if you're trying to type it into some browser. And his latest book is, I think it's only $6, because it's a brief condensation and a guidebook to the larger picture that Lourdes Lord, I'm sure, is going to be talking about. But if Dennis will allow, I'd like to read this editorial. It's not too long, directly from the New York Times 3 days ago, February 8th. And it's from their writer on food and things related to food. In other words, diet, nutrition, health. His name is Mark Bittman. You eat food by biting it. No, B-I-T-T-M-A-N. He's a man that bites a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when he's eating.
But
anyway,
he's a vegetarian, so.
Well, I don't know about that, but here's his article. He says, is eat real food, which is a concept of Michael Pollan's and others, rather than eating processed food or food that's so full of artificial ingredients, like some of those contaminants we may find out more about from Lourdes Lord on next Tuesday. He says, is it unthinkable? Well, let's hope not. But here's the statement. He says, in recent weeks, we've seen a big, powerful government agency, a big, powerful person, and a big, powerful corporation telling us what to eat. Even with all this big, powerful input, we know nothing that we didn't know last year. We do, however, have a new acronym. Unfortunately, it's not the one we need. An acronym is a combination of letters that make, you know, your easy to remember. He says, and a little progress has happened too, though. Limited kudos go to the United States Department of Agriculture, whose Dietary Guidelines for Americans 2010, well, yeah, it's 2011, but they're published every 5 years, are the best to date. We're told to, quote, to eat, quote, less food, unquote, and more fresh foods. Wise advice, Mark Bittman says. But aside from salt, the agency buries most vague recommendations about what we should eat, what we should be eating less of. We're admonished to drink, quote, fewer no, unquote, sodas. Hooray for that, he says. And refined grains, quote, unquote, solid fats, capital S, capital F, and added sugars, capital A, capital S. So those are the categories of things we should eat less of. And there's our fabulous acronym, SOFAS. S-O-F-A-S. So, that stands for, is that just solid fats and added sugars? Yeah, that's solid fats and added sugars is SOFAS. So you don't want SOFAS,
okay,
except to watch TV from.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, the problem, as usual, he goes on to say, is that the agency, and this is the U.S. Department of Agriculture, that their nutrition experts are at odds with its other mission, to promote our bounty in whatever form its processors make. So one of the reasons we have to say the United States Department of Agriculture is there is to promote all the food growers and producers, or semi-food producers in the United States of America. So it's like a chamber of commerce for these people to support their businesses. And that's, I understand that that's appropriate, but you know, how much can they support businesses that, on the other hand, the other part of their job is regulatory and safe food for all of us, if they know it's really not that safe or nutritious?
Right.
So they've got two
conflicting,
almost conflicting, yeah, contradictory purposes in the USDA. Okay, so the USDA, he says, can succeed at its conflicting goals only by convincing us that eating manufactured food lower in SOFAS is healthy, thus implicitly endorsing hyper-engineered junk food with added fiber, reduced fats, and so on. Food, so-called, that is often unimaginably far from its origins. When it comes to eating more good, quote-unquote, food, the report is clear, because that can't harm producers. Because producers are producing food that is not real food and has a lot of additives. Oh, my goodness. When it comes to eating less of what's bad, quote-unquote, the language turns to science, again, in quotes, because telling us which products to avoid, like a 3,000-calorie fast food so-called meal, or a box of low-fat but chemically-laden crackers, would play badly with the food industry in the U.S., instead, we're just told to avoid SOFAS. So where's the SOFAS aisle? Which aisle can we avoid? Unfortunately, the bad food is in every aisle. Yeah. The report might have led with Michael Pollan's groundbreaking slogan, he says, as I mentioned before, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, and then explain details in a few pages. But although the agency's advisory committee suggested a, quote, shift toward a more plant-based diet that is more vegetarian, less meat, unquote, the report itself backs, quote, a healthy eating pattern, unquote, and then over 100-plus pages proceeds to imprecision to avoid offending meat and sugar lobbies. Now, the salt lobby, which they attack, is evidently puny, so yeah, they can say, you know, reduce salt, and the salt lobby can't make too big a play for that. In its attempts to upset no one powerful, the USDA offers a typically contorted message. The advice people need is to cook and eat more real food at the expense of the junk served in most restaurants and takeout places. In fact, and by the way, that time, the use of the term junk by Michael Pittman of the New York Times is not in quotes. In expense of the junk, the real bad stuff, folks, I'm saying, served in most restaurants and takeout places. In fact, most of the mysterious sofas come from so-called fast and convenient food, as does sodium. And it's the salt shaker is not the culprit. It's the food, it's the salt that's in the food.
Right,
the fillers. That they put in the food.
Sure, sure.
He says it isn't easy to cook with the junk that makes junk food junky, but the agency spends little energy boosting cooking. There is the, quote, cook and eat more meals at home, include vegetables, fruits, whole grains, fat-free or low-free dairy products, and protein foods that provide fewer calories and more nutrients, which would be choices like soy milk.
Right.
It would give you the protein, but it wouldn't give you the fats. That's unquote there. But it stands almost alone and could have been far simpler and stronger. Why isn't it, says Michael Pittman? Because, he concludes, protein foods that provide fewer calories, that phrase doesn't offend the meat industry, as Poland's motto does. Which brings us to the powerful person, Oprah.
Vaguely familiar.
Yes. Ms. Winfrey, who has been on more diets, he says, than the rest of us combined, challenged her staff to, quote-unquote, go vegan for a week.
Right.
Intriguing, except her idea of surviving without meat and dairy, no explanation given why we should go from too much to none, is to fill your shopping cart with fake versions of both, like meatless chicken breast and dairyless cheese.
Hmm.
So fake cheese and fake chicken breast, which is not chicken at all. Okay.
That means there's synthetic things.
Yeah, I have actually sampled many of these things, and if you look at the box and you read it, and of course there's no real like chicken in the meatless chicken breast because there's meatless, duh.
Right.
And there's no cheese in the dairyless cheese. How does it taste? It tastes bad,
yeah,
to me. I've tried several kinds of meatless sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Tofurkey. Yes.
Okay.
Tofurkey is one brand. And it doesn't. And look at the additives. I'm sure Lourdes Lohr will have a lot to say. These are processed foods. So they have to be processed because they're not real food at all.
That's my point.
Even though they have no meat and no dairy in
right.
them, they're not processed at all. They are heavily processed because they're manufactured to look and try to taste
and texture
like the real
sure.
thing, which you shouldn't be eating much of anyway. And so that's what Oprah did. She said they can go vegan. They just got to buy the fake versions.
That's like the black bean burgers and stuff, right? I think they make a lot of it.
Well, now, black bean burgers do have some additives in them, but they're mostly soy.
Is it pretty good?
And
okay.
soy is not bad,
no,
I mean,
no,
for
no,
you
soy.
In any way. And those soy products usually have less additives than the fake cheese. I mean, trying to make cheese from scratch without cheese
right.
is a real challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, what the heck do you put in there without cheese, without milk? I mean, you got to put color, you
yep.
know, and all this artificial
whatever
stuff.
Whatever fits in the test tube.
A black bean burger is mostly black beans.
Yeah.
And beans are good.
Beans
are a protein source. And so, although they will, because it is processed and packaged for you, they will have a lot of salt.
Right.
And which they don't need to have, but they do for the taste factor, and so on and so forth. So, as he says here, the goal is not universal veganism, which is pie in the sky, he says, is health and sustainability. Ooh, there's that sustainability phrase.
You know, that word always warms its way in, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because somebody said, well, climate change people, why are they talking about food? it's related.
Everything. Sure. Okay. Sure. You've talked about it at length about how, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but to eat meat, all the things that go into the energy that's wasted on
raising the cattle.
Raising the cattle, the transportation, just all right. of everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all those things take their toll
it's
on our
It's not
heart.
Energy efficient right. as well as maybe harmful the way that we're doing that. By the way, in the news today, I see that Tyson just settled the largest suit with the federal government for bribing food inspection officials in Mexico, one of their biggest plants. Tyson Foods is the biggest producer of poultry in the world, shipping everywhere, including the U.S. Now, they had to pay a fine of $3.2 million, which, when you realize they make $16 billion worth of profit every year, is nothing.
Right.
But they actually were bribing the inspectors to pass food that wasn't necessarily healthful. Now, they claim it was healthful, and that none of it was sent to the U.S.
Right.
But if you're bribing people to pass it, whether it's healthful or not, that doesn't...
Right. Right away is a flag.
It's scary, yeah. we need regulation, folks. If it wasn't for the USDA and finding this out and cracking down on it, then all the health inspectors would be bribed by all the big companies to make more profits. And they say, well, you don't really need inspectors to watch closely because, hey, it's only a little bit of food every now and then that's deadly. I don't know what they're saying, but that's crazy, okay? You can see how big government is necessary, I hope. Sometimes. That's all I'm saying in this show. For you tea baggers out there, Tea Party people and libertarians, which I like to call myself mostly most of the time, I have to agree with you. Big government can do things very badly and take away rights and freedoms. Our own government is an example that has done that in places. But other places, like regulating the quality of our food and even our environment through the EPA, boy, do we desperately need it because nobody else is going to do it. Nobody else is going to do
it.
Greed and self-interest, and in other words, the profit motive,
right.
is going to trump any sort of concern for community good.
Right. Yeah. They're not policing themselves. The thing is, though, and I don't know how it is now, but the joke has always been that they'd rather pay the fine because it's cheaper than actually fixing the problem ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Ford Motor Company. I'm sorry, Ford Motor Company. This is old news, but back in the 60s, they had a compact car called the Pinto. It was their answer to the Chevy Corvair, which was Ralph Nader's claim to fame to debunk the safety of that and get it off the road. The Pinto was a little bit better, except for the hatchback model in terms of safety. The hatchback model, they discovered the public citizen group, Pergium, I think it was called then, that Ralph Nader set up, discovered secret memos that Ford knew that if the car was hit from behind, the hatchback Pinto,
right.
at greater than 5 miles an hour, it would burst into flames, killing anyone inside the car if there was a spark involved, like they were smoking or two pieces of metal happened to rub together during the impact, which
right.
is quite common.
Sure.
The whole thing would be a gasoline bomb, a Molotov cocktail. And so people, after this came out, of course, Ford said, well, we didn't know that. And then they discovered the memos, which were handwritten and typed in those days, not emails,
right.
in which they clearly knew about it 3-4 years in advance. An engineer said, look, we tested this, and this is a safety hazard.
Right.
And Ford's response was, okay, we'll just pay the legal fees on the few people that die in the crashes.
Right.
You know, when they sue us. And they let it go to be made. And to be sold all across the U.S. as their premier car. And they knew it. There was a movie version, a fictitious name was used, not for Ford Motor, but Gene Hackman and some great young actress, they played the champion law team that uncovered this and brought this automaker down in terms of that car. So, I mean, even Ford Motor, well, we'll just like you said, we'll just pay the fine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, too expensive to make the car safe in that regard up front. I think the hilarious thing was people who were forced to keep their Pinto hatchbacks after this came out, they started buying and putting on their back bumper a bumper sticker saying, don't hit me or I'll blow up in your face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so that was
probably Nader's idea.
Really unfortunate. I don't think you'll find any Pinto hatchbacks on the market anymore. Well, 40 years old.
Darn.
They also won't be at the Barrett Jackson car auctions either.
No.
Nobody wants one of those. Okay. Talk about death trap. Can you spell death trap? Okay, and the final story here with Michael Bittman's article about food and real food, the powerful corporation, Walmart. Hey, local angle. Walmart's right here in Dearborn there.
Sure.
Up on Ford Road, a former Kmart store. Walmart, whose alliance with Michelle Obama looks pretty good, at least at first. We are promised more affordable produce, which undoubtedly means that Walmart will beat the living daylights out of produce suppliers, crushing a few thousand more small farmers. In fact, he says in parentheses, what we need is higher quality and probably more expensive produce, higher quality and therefore more expensive produce, that which is less damaging to the environment, laborers, and consumers. In other words, talk about eat less. You will eat less if the food costs more. But if it's really healthy and therefore more nutritious, too, you got a bargain going. It's worth every penny to get food that's organic, naturally grown, locally grown, even if it costs a little more, because you shouldn't eat so much anyway.
Well, you know, and this is that's a great... That subject comes up at the sustainability the panels because being green sometimes can be expensive. You know, the better light bulbs are a little bit more. Even though they last longer, it's an initial investment is a little bit more. It's the same thing with organic food. Now, at the same time, we have the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market where we have locally grown products that are here. Did you find that cost prohibitive?
And the two other specialized markets, the one down on Monroe Street in West Dearborn.
Sure, the Dearborn Market.
Yeah, and the Dearborn Farm Market and then the Westbourne, they often have locally grown. Not all the time, locally grown and often organic products, therefore, too.
Well, my question was, you spent a lot of Fridays down at the market. Did you find it cost prohibitive? Not at all. It may have been
It all depends on what your budget is. No, I had my spending limit at $10, and when I got done with that, that's all I could buy. I might have wanted to buy more.
Well, but, you told Amy and me to buy it for you, sure.
Yeah, well, that's okay. thanks for that extra bread. He says, you know, let's just conclude this and get on to Jim Hightower here and his commentaries, too, nationally. The real problem, again, is that Walmart's other promise, healthier, in quotes, packaged foods, and whether baked low-salt chips are better, so-called better, than fried ones, is not only arguable, the baked ones, by the way, are more likely to be chemical-laden.
And that's the point of this
whole
thing.
People buy like the baked potato chips.
Right.
Oh, they're baked. They're more healthy. Take a look at the additives.
Right.
The contaminants. Just like even if you've got to drink a soda, probably, you don't want to drink much, but probably the real sugar sodas are better than the ones with the artificial sweeteners. Because those chemicals, one of which is called aspartame, and it's known by something else in this country, it's banned in Canada.
Really?
Yeah, because 40% of the people that consume any aspartame as a sweetener, 40% in Canada only, get headaches or have other negative health reactions.
Yeah, I heard about the headaches.
Yeah, and I get them. I know. So I had to avoid that, and I forget. It's not. I don't want to be mistaken here about the common trade name in the U.S. for aspartame. We'll get back to you on that. Or come to the sustainability conference and ask that question.
That's a great idea.
On Tuesday night. Okay, here. He says the truly healthy alternative is to that chip, that big chip, chemical laden, is not a fake chip. It's a carrot.
Same texture. You know, tastes a little different.
It fills your stomach up. It's healthy. It really was grown in the ground. It wasn't made out of artificial anything. Like, now, it may, unless it's organic, and it's so easy, and it's almost the same price to buy organic carrots at like, for example, Kroger's, where I shop. They always have organic carrots. They don't have a wide variety of anything else, but organic carrots and lettuce and celery is right there, and it's almost exactly the same price. Of course, you would wash a carrot anyway to get maybe some dirt off of it, but you know, the contaminants might get inside too, pesticides and so on, as it's growing. Yeah, likewise, he says, the alternative to sausage is not vegan sausage, it's less sausage. Okay, just eat less.
Right.
If you got to have sausage, eat a smaller piece. I have to mention here on this, and I know we've gone on a while, but I hope this is helpful to our listeners. You didn't know this was going to be a health show, did you?
Me either.
But it can be. Is that I found organic beef, it's actually bison, but it's grown organically, and I get it shipped to me from, there's several producers, you can Google it, folks, out west, and you look at their recommendations to see if they're really organic and so on. A lot of people say, oh, I don't want to eat the poor buffalo. That's a symbol of America. He's on my nickel. Is he still on the nickel, the buffalo?
That's since 1949, I think.
Oh, well, how soon I forget. But in fact, there's all these poor beef out there, too, that are equally nice to look at and kind and gentle. And you could even pet them if you found one in real life. And remember the cows, which is the female beef, okay? My gosh, they're all sweet things. They're all human, you know, supporting human beings, these creatures, keeping us alive in one way or the other. And we're killing them, folks, in order to eat. So what I did, I found... They're called sliders. They're 2-inch organic beef patties. So I don't have to cut them at home from a slab of ground beef,
right?
Which usually gets me 4 ounces or 6 or 8 ounces. Just trying to cut them thin even is difficult. But they're all prepackaged and it's still organic. They just have them separated that way. And so I eat 1 or 2 a week, and that's it. That's my meat at home.
Right.
Because often if I have to eat out once or twice a week, almost have to have something that's got a little meat in it because they have nothing else on the menu, right, which is a challenge. So you could eat less sausage, less meat. You could and still be satisfied, especially if it's organic. Then, every little chew it slower and enjoy the experience of real organic food. This is all really pretty simple, Mike Bittman says, and pretty clear, but the messages we've heard recently are as clear as, well, SOFA. He says, you want an acronym? Let's try ERF. Eat real food. And that's the opinion of Michael Bittman, New York Times food writer. And so come to the food and climate change session. Dennis and I are going to be there, or at least I will be.
I'll be there.
And it is a bring your own food, so if it's potluck, and you better not bring artificial stuff.
I'm going to bring Godiva just for you.
Yeah, well, thanks. Okay. Day late, pound ton.
Yes,
okay.
Right.
Yeah, and we want to talk about the alternative. Why not? It's Alternative Energy Summit hits our campus. It hits the campus. Boom!
Wow.
Hits the guy. I love the titles that the managing editors put on stories. In this case, I think it was our own...
Maybe Gary
Director Irwin. Communications. Oh, well, sorry, Gary. But you have to have a short title that's punchy and gets people's attention. And it's the 4th annual Alternative Energy Summit, and we've covered that event and promoted it and attended it for the last several years here on the Journal. This time it's titled Green Entrepreneurship. So it's local green businesses. They usually always have green businesses with displays there. So anybody that might be wanting to go into the field might want to figure out, well, what are these companies like? What do they do? Could I get a job with them someday? Or maybe how do I start my own green business if I already think I know enough or have a unique angle on something? Keynote speakers include Scott Minos of the U.S. Department of Energy, Chuck Colin of DTE. They know something about energy.
Sure.
Our famous gas and electrical conglomerate here. And Mac Roush of WWJ News Radio.
Matt Roush.
Roush?
Yes.
Good old Matt.
Yeah. Yes.
You see how much I know him.
Well, he's been at a couple of the MAB things. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I should have realized.
Pretty good guy.
Yeah. So they're going to cover topics like create a green startup company, get energy efficiency in your business or home, electric cars. What's the technology? Go green in your business, and also cities go green, learn how. Attendees can also visit the Hands-On Business Expo and take a ride in a hybrid car, which is probably our own president, Dr. Mee's Ford Escape that she's had for a couple. This is her second or third hybrid since she got to the college. Probably leases them. But anyway, that's free and open to the public, that event. Starts at 8:30 in the morning, goes to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 weeks from today. And Dennis and I will be probably over there one time or the other. The journal for that day will be the pre-recorded State of the City address here in Dearborn by Michael Guido, which happens on the 23rd. We can't cover that live.
No, Mayor O'Reilly.
Mayor O'Reilly. What did I say?
Guido. Yeah. He'll be here in spirit. He'll be
in spirit. Sure. Yes, our mayor from the past. Okay. So Mayor O'Reilly will be giving our, and this is a very important speech, I'm sure, and there will be limited seating available. That's going to be on Wednesday night, the 23rd, 7 p.m. at the Centennial Library here in Dearborn, on Michigan
Avenue. Very intimate setting, right?
Yeah. Now, you don't have to reserve in advance, but if you come after 7 o'clock, they won't let you in. And probably there's only about 150 seats in that auditorium.
I think 150, 170.
So, if you want to see it in person, I'm told that I think this time, and it wasn't last year, but CDTV is going to try to broadcast it live on their local cable channels.
Okay. No, they recorded last year. You're right. Yeah, we were the only live.
We were live, and they were recorded. This year, they're going to be live, and we're going to record it. And you can either watch it on later, after the fact, of course, on CDTV. They'll be rotating it, I'm sure, heavily. But it'll be on the Journal show, a special pre-recorded version of the Journal with just the State of the City address and maybe some filler comments from yours truly, because we're going to be over at the Energy Summit in the morning and the afternoon there. So free and open to the public. Maybe you can swing by from 8, they say here 8 a.m. I thought 8:30 was the sign-in time. It says 8:30 on the official poster, so it must have been an earlier spot. So try to get there by 8:30.
Of course, they open up event parking, so it's not a major deal.
Right,
it's
no, free parking right here in the college
now.
Area.
I love it.
Right. They actually push the faculty and administrators into another lot so they can get as
many
people
problem.
As possible there. No, I don't either. It's fine. And so that's the 4th Annual Alternative Energy Summit, HFCC, 2 weeks from today, February 25th, 8:30 to 4 p.m. at the Administrative Services and Conference Center at the HFCC main campus, Evergreen Road, south of Ford. So be there or be square, as they used to say. Well, let's have one Jim Hightower comment. It is only about 15 minutes to go in this hour, and then Highway 61, Big Ben and more, is going to be coming up with Joanne Korchinska. Let's see. I've got two commentaries, as I usually do, but hey, I think health and the environment trumps Jim Hightower in this case. Congress slumps back to Tom DeLay ethics. Now, DeLay was a Republican leader in the House. He is now convicted of misdoing in Texas, and he hasn't started his 3-year term yet. He's still appealing, I think. But
you mean his 3-year sentence?
3-year sentence.
For some, that's a
term. Yeah, not a term in office, but a term
Freudian
in prison.
Slip, right?
A prison term, folks. Yeah. So let's listen to this one commentary from Hightower, and Dennis and I will be back with more local news and alternative views to finish up today's show. Take it away, Jim. I'll get there.
This new Republican-run House of Representatives is looking a lot like the old Ethics Be Damned House run just a few years ago by the convicted money launderer, Tom DeLay. Only more so. Back when DeLay was the GOP's corrupt majority leader, he got caught hustling campaign funds from an energy corporation whose legislation he then helped pass. This flagrant cash-for-legislation exchange was so stinky that even DeLay's pals on the Ethics Committee had to slap his wrist, ruling in 2004 that a Congress critter should not engage in fundraising, quote, that gives even an appearance that donors will receive special treatment. Now, fast forward to last year, when the independent investigative arm of the House Ethics Committee charged 2 Republicans and 1 Democrat with DeLay-style money hustles. The investigators found compelling proof that these powerful members collected checks from Wall Street lobbyists just before voting their way on regulatory reforms. Emails and other incriminating documents show that one of the eager check collectors even left the Capitol while the House was debating the reforms so he could attend the fundraiser being thrown for him at a lobbyist's home. He then returned to the floor to vote against the reforms exactly as his grinning Wall Street donors wanted. The punishment for these miscreants? None. In one of its first acts this year, the new Ethics Committee merely dropped all charges against their delighted colleagues. In an Alice in Wonderland moment, the committee declared on January 26 that there was no connection between the vote and the cash, adding that no, quote, reasonable person would see even an appearance of impropriety in the exchange. This is Jim Hightower saying, excuse me for being unreasonable, but it appears obvious that what the committee has done is to set an ethical standard for this Congress that's even lower than the dark days of Tom DeLay.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
I think the whole point there is to recuse yourself from a vote. If you're an elected representative and you're taking significant money from a lobbyist group and you've got to vote on that bill that can benefit their industry, you shouldn't vote. Now, of course, it's not just one representative that's paid by, I don't know, let's say a health drug manufacturer, a drug company, okay, they spread the money around to an awful lot of representatives to help their reelection campaign. And I know even John Dingell has told me in face-to-face, in person, when I confronted him about this, oh, just because I take the money doesn't mean I have to vote the way that they want me to.
That doesn't make sense.
But if you track it, folks, they generally do. And there's a question. It's called conflict of interest.
Sure.
Are they doing it because of the money or not? Maybe they don't even know. Maybe subconsciously they don't know, but consciously they know they got the money. Somebody tells them who their big donors are. They update them every week or two in the office. You
right.
know, well, we just got a check from the, some drug company here.
Right.
And, they got a bill coming up, by the way, don't you know? Oh, yeah, well, I'll try to be fair about that. Sure, but in the back of your head, they're giving me all this money. What would I do without it? I might not get reelected every
Plus
2 years.
The public perception. I mean, right there, that is enough yeah. that there's a conflict.
But as Hightower said, Republicans, now in charge of the Ethics Committee, said, oh, no. No rational person would think that just because we take the money, we're going to vote for the bill.
Yeah, rational people would exactly think that.
Exactly. That's what Hightower just said. Huh. He said in his irrationality,
yeah.
of course it's going to be that way.
Right.
There should be an absolute rule that elected reps, of course, and you think, well, then why would the rep give somebody money if this guy is not going to vote the way they want him to?
Right.
The way they're suggesting. That's right. That's right, exactly. There shouldn't, my humble opinion here, there shouldn't be lobbyist money coming in
no.
because it's going to taint the whole objective decision-making process. Sure, lobbyists should be there for information and background and make recommendations, but the money thing? Ban it. Well, how would these people run for office then? I got answers to that, too. There's no problem. It just, we wouldn't have the same people in office. Because we wouldn't have all the big corporate money reelecting the corporate, you know, non-thinking representatives. We would have people in office who actually were without that taint. Let's just put it that way. Without that, I won't call the people in office corrupt who've taken this money for years and vote for these same industries. No, but have lobbyists, sure, register them, but make sure they don't give presents, they don't give free trips, they don't give money. Wouldn't that save their bill? Wouldn't that lower the cost of lobbying, too? And maybe lower prices on their drugs to us and other products. Well, that's my humble opinion here. The Ethics Committee is unethical. I agree with Mr. Hightower about this. In other areas of, like, the legal practice, people recuse themselves. That is, they excuse themselves from voting because of potential conflict of interest, whether there is going to be one or not. It's just the perception. If the perception of possible unfairness is there, they should get out of it.
Absolutely.
They should move out of that discussion. They can argue, but they can't vote. Okay. They could argue on the floor however they feel about a bill, but they can't vote in that if they've taken a ton of money from that lobbyist. And I think the fair thing to do is to ban all lobbying contributions and gifts to all of our elected representatives.
Well, as soon as they don't vote on that for that particular vote, they're not going to get any more. You know what I mean?
What's the consequence? Uh-oh, the representatives are going to have more of the fake chicken dinners.
Oh, good.
You know, banquets.
Yeah, that's
for their
a great
constituents.
Idea. Nope, I'm sorry. This is what you get to eat.
No, we'll do vegan dinners. We'll tell them how to do that.
All right.
So, okay.
Do you want me to touch on this? This is interesting, and we could attack this from 25 different angles, but we're talking about a story regarding Allen Park. They had a town hall meeting on Tuesday, and it was all about the residents were concerned about the Allen Park Studio Center, the former, the area formerly known.
Film studio.
Allen Park Studio Center is what they call the whole
thing. Yeah. The whole complex, but it's primarily for film and television.
They
production.
Had the Unity Studios and then the Lifton Institute, which was teaching. Of course, they pulled out early in October.
And Lifton was the one behind Unity Studios.
Exactly. So they were both
basically his Lifton project. Yeah.
But we can look at this at any angle. The thing was 70 people showed up, and they were complaining about two things in particular. One, they feel now it looks like that the property, the 104-acre property, was overvalued by as much as $4 million, which brings up the question, well, didn't it get an appraisal? And the city said, well, no, nobody asked me to. The attorney for the city at the time said I wasn't asked to do a full appraisal. So they bought property that may have been, they paid more than by as much as $4 million more than it was worth. And then the second part is, as the article puts, a hot-button issue addressed was the use of $1.4 million from the general fund for the city, and that was to cover outstanding debt on that same complex. But they didn't get a vote from the residents.
Yep.
So here's the bond issue is coming up, in other words, and there's so many things. Ultimately, Jay, and I think you and I have talked about this, it looks like they maybe jumped into something feet first without actually knowing what they were jumping into. And it's all kind of coming back.
Well, as a telecom professional and somebody who's worked in the film business, television business briefly, and has had a lot of friends and former students working in the business, I can tell you it's a cutthroat, desperate business. Coming into Michigan just because of a tax credit is not necessarily the right idea. Some companies can actually exploit the situation by being here a couple of years, turning a small profit because of that, and just, I mean, they know up front they're going to get out.
Sure.
That they're, you know, it's only one chance in 100 maybe that they can sustain it and will stay. And I think the cities should have been aware of that. Now, the Unity Studios plan in Allen Park, I criticized it at the outset as being too huge too soon.
Right.
In other words, yes, they need to think about that, maybe have an option on the land, but not to jump in the way they did. And even, I'm sorry, as an educator, even their training institute, I thought, was misadvertised. I won't say fraud. I didn't say fraud, people. I did not say fraud, but misadvertised and overadvertised, giving people hope that if they pass that, they'll immediately have a career
right
in the film and television business. And that it just was not the case. They, you know, small print, no, that's not necessarily going to happen. And they didn't even necessarily hire them at their studios, which are not there anyway right now. So,
right.
And thousands of dollars for, I think, 8 to 10 months of instruction, which really wasn't what you think. And no college transferability,
right.
Therefore no possible telecom degree ever for you, which would really matter more. No real understanding of the industry to go somewhere else in the country even to be part of it.
I have several friends that went through the editing program, and they're not
there or here.
At Unity,
okay.
At Lifton, excuse me, Lifton.
Okay,
and now when I call them, they ask me if I would like fries with that.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I mean, that's a
right,
bad metaphor.
They're working in fast food.
But the point of it is that, no, they're not working in the industry.
Oh, okay.
And they felt that they had enough experience to. Well,
mm-hmm.
The credibility wasn't there for them to go out and get a job.
Right.
This whole article, all it's about is that the residents aren't getting answers from their questions. The city council doesn't really know what to do. So there you go.
Okay, in the Times Herald this week, and Wyandotte, we're going to look at Wyandotte, because here's another big project. We'll have to finish with this. We've got about 4 minutes left at the end of the hour. Wyandotte has proposals, and they've always been at the forefront locally for trying to, as a city, control cable television themselves and put and own as a city, and therefore more responsive to their residents and maybe lower costs in the long run, energy projects, alternative energy projects. And they had people come in and give ideas to the public. A public hearing happened a couple days ago, February 7th. The Times Herald mentions it because their paper now comes out some places on February 6th, even though I get it on the 12th, the Wednesday.
Right.
But so
6th
some,
is a Sunday. So
some people get it. No.
Well, the 7th was Monday.
Yeah, okay. And all the way from February 6th to the 12th, which is tomorrow. So it's their paper is dated technically for the whole week.
Okay.
Okay,
gotcha.
Depending on how you pick it up and where you pick it up. I actually get it delivered to my house, I think mail, for the Times Herald subscription on Wednesdays. So that already happened, this public hearing regarding the issue on the 7th, but the report already went to the council meeting a week ago Monday. And so that's what they report here. So get this. This is what it is. This is a new plant that will produce electricity. It is a proposed gasification plant, okay, for Wyandotte itself. Now, Councilwoman in Wyandotte, Sherry Sotheby Frick, that's her name, has voiced concerns in recent months about the past that the trucks carrying refuse-derived fuel pellets to the plants, where they'd be used to produce gas, okay, for energy, would take, and whether the trucks would be inspected to ensure whether they were, to ensure that they were not bringing anything else into the city. Well, I'm sorry, it doesn't make sense to me. what else would go to this plant? They need pellets. They need the pellets in order to, you know, that are produced by another plant. So there is a connection between two facilities,
right.
One that produces these. And so the chief executive officer of the Florida-based R2 Automation, get that R2 like in R2-D2? Okay. Plant which manufactures the gasification technology, they will turn pellets made from paper-based refuse into power.
Okay.
But that plant that turns paper-based refuse, like waste paper, you mm-hmm. know, like from your trash cans and so on, maybe cardboard too, is one plant, and they've got to take the pellets to this other plant. Well, as it was clearly stated here, and I don't know where the council person got this idea that the pellets might be hazardous, he said, we could take a whole bunch of these pellets, dump them right here in the council room, and we could still have a meeting here next week. There's no gases, there's no pollution, there's no odors. So once they squeeze, it's just paper anyway.
Right.
They squeeze all the paper products into the pellets. What is she worried about? They're just delivering squeezed paper pellets
right.
to the gasification plant. Okay? And so I think the questions are answerable there. I mean, gee whiz. And guess what? Also, and I'll just finish the story here. They talk about where the trucks are going to travel along what streets, as
right.
if it matters. There's
right.
no pollution. There's no hazard here. Folks, this is not dangerous garbage. It's already been turned into innocent, no gas, no smell, no pollution pellets. Okay?
I
just want to say.
Sure.
The trucks themselves and the route are always going to be under inspection by the EPA.
Is there a concern
that the Republicans want to cut the budget on?
Oh.
So our federal government EPA is going to even though there shouldn't be a worry here, right? But the EPA is going to be inspecting them and regulating them anyway. So come on, folks. Full speed ahead, I was going to say full power,
yeah.
to the new gasification plant that will help energy needs making use of refuse paper that normally would just go to landfill.
You know,
and okay, it's biodegradable, but why let it degrade and all that energy just, you know, trickle back into the environment for global warming or whatever? Let's use it for this energy solution that Wyandotte has had. So more power to Wyandotte for getting the idea together.
No pun intended.
They found several grants that will help pay for it. So there's from the federal government, not all of it, but a lot of it, and it will be making money for them. So good step forward there. Maybe Unity failed in Allen Park, but maybe Allen Park wants to consider a gasification plant themselves now to make up for the
former
disaster.
Former Unity Studios.
Yeah. Energy generation might be better than the couple of jobs.
And also,
making movies, okay, it takes a couple hundred people to make a movie, although a lot of them are low-paid people. Only a few people make big bucks in making a feature film. A lot of the money is spent on other facilities in the area, you know, the huge budget that is needed. But there's not that many jobs related to feature films that people might think, unlike making cars, which is very... robot intensive these days, but there's still a lot of jobs there keeping the robots happy. So, okay, well, we got to finish up the journal. We're waiting for Joanne Korchinska to physically arrive. She may be coming in any minute now. Last week she was a little bit late. It was because of this terrible train accident in West Dearborn, which is blocks away from Joanne lives, that a Dearborn